the term was not used in the specification, but the term and claim was not the specification, but it was still understood. But going to your second part of the question, even if the presumption was overcome, and this should have been a means plus function claim, then the actual structure identified by the district court was an error. The district court identified a controller with a database management system with an algorithm thereafter. But what the mistake there is, that's the same computational element referred to in the claim. The first element of the claim is at least one computational element within the said system. The second element is a use mechanism coupled to said computational element. The court determined that the means, the structural component, was the actual computational element. It's actually coupled to that. It doesn't make sense. If you read the actual specification, what is the proper structure, if it is a means plus function, is the counter. And the counter is clearly identified in column lines, column 3, line 48 through 54, where it says the preferred embodiment of the present invention uses page counts and parameter related to the user, the customer usage, to create the ORC tracking chart. Actually tells you exactly what is being used for.
I guess I'm finding the argument a bit confusing. Is there any case where you've created an otherwise kind of black box term with a different term in the specification and held that because the different term connotes sufficient structure, you avoid means plus function? This seems like you're making some leaps to get to where you want to go. And I don't know, maybe you can help me understand what your argument is, if there are other cases, because I don't know of any, which use kind of embrace your theory to get where you want to go.
I think the case that's closest is Greenberg v. Ethicon. And I believe that would be the closest case. But then, after the district court decided there was a means plus function claim, it then determined that there was non-infringement. Now, there, even with the construction given by the district court, there were factual issues in dispute at that point. The district court said that Masa, my client, relied entirely on the opinion of its expert. That's not true. It also relied on the technical documents of RICO and the testimony of RICO's engineers. And those are cited throughout the expert report, but they are there. And if you look at the actual the pages that are actually pasted into the expert report, there is structure there that would equate to the structure that the district court found in his means plus function analysis. And specifically, appendix 13472 through 486, there is a wealth of information in that expert report that shows the actual database manager and the algorithms that's been described by the district court. So there's three arguments we're making for this claim. One, it shouldn't be means plus function, the presumption was overcome. Two, if it was a means plus function, then it should have been a different structure.
Means plus function analysis. And specifically, at appendix 13472 through 486, there is a wealth of information in that expert report that shows the actual database manager and the algorithms that's been described by the district court. So there's three arguments we're making for this claim. One, it shouldn't be means plus function. The presumption was overcome. Two, if it was a means plus function, then it should have been a different structure. It should have been a counter structure. And three, there are issues of fact, regardless if the claim construction was not incorrect. Unless there's any more questions on the 285 patent, I'll go to the 314 patent next.
Well, you had a divided infringement argument with respect to summary judgment of non-infringement.
That was the method claim, and there
claim 14. Okay, so you were not.
Well, I'm just trying to get through
sure.
Time
no,
here.
No, go ahead.
But it is something. The papers I think are good on that. The 314 patent. Here, the district court made a claim interpretation at summary judgment stage of the term display. It was not briefed in the claim construction stage, and during the summary judgment, the district court found a display to be a monitor or physical hardware. It was not a software display. But that's just clearly incorrect. If you look at the actual preamble of the claim, what the patent is about, an interface implemented in a computer. A monitor cannot be implemented in a computer. And that interface comprises a display. Now, in this patent, it actually gives you a figure showing the display, figure 4. And column 14, lines 60 through 67, describe figure 4. And it says, referring now to figure 4, this is showing a representation of a graphical user interface display. 400, according to the preferred embodiment. The display 400 includes viewer 306 and desktop 302 components. So now it tells you what the display is, has a picture of it in figure 4, and says that the display includes a viewer 306 and desktop 302. So then you look down to the column 13, lines 29 through 37, to figure out what is the viewer 36, the viewer 306. And it says in that column, that paragraph, in the preferred embodiment, the viewer component is implemented using the Adobe Acrobat version 405, manufactured by Adobe System. That's software. And then the desktop 302, this is column 13, lines 22 through 28, the desktop 302 is preferably implemented using an object-oriented programming language, which implements the object-oriented nature of the GUI.
Well, I guess, I mean, we're going through just details of the spec. I mean, what the district court's main argument was that there was the use of the term on.
Right.
And he rested on that. Well, why doesn't that make a lot of sense?
Because you can rest on a GUI, a GUI. It's in software parlance. When it says on a display, that's not exclusive of having it on a graphical user interface display, a software display. This patent doesn't mention the word monitor anywhere in the claims or in the specification, nowhere. This is about a software display. It's specifically identified as a software display. The components are software that identifies in the specification. The only thing that can be surmised from this is that it's a software display. That being said, if this was decided at the claim construction stage, while the case is still ongoing, then my client would have had a chance to put in evidence that Ricoh actually sells hardware as well. This was decided at summary judgment when the software display was there. Ricoh sells massive printers and computers. They have displays on, physical displays. That was not our position. And based on the specification, it was very clear this was about a software display. So for that fact, the summary judgment of non-infringement should be set aside as well, even if the claim construction stands. But there's also testing testimony from their engineer.
There's also an argument of forfeiture in this case, right?
Well,
other side argues, and I didn't see your response really fulsome and gray.
Well, in our reply brief, we talked about the forfeiture. They said we did not raise this issue, but how could we raise it? It came up for the first time in summary judgment. The claim construction came up at summary judgment. So we were not given the opportunity to put in evidence if the claim construction is correct, which we would say is not. And finally, let me just get real quickly, because I'm running out of time here, on the two patents that were invalidated and indefinite. The 3005 patent, where the district court determined that a guide plate pivoting at least substantially around said axis to guide was a degree of measure. But if you look at the actual claim language, it talks about, it refers back to the antecedent basis to said axis to guide. So when it says said axis, it refers back up to the first element of the skimmer. In this particular instance, the patentee gave great detail that this was a positional location, not a degree of measurement. Positional location is relative to the skimmer and comprising rotational and frictional. And it actually gives three figures 9, 10, and 12 in the patent, showing where that would be. It also describes it in great detail in columns 24 through 34. And let me touch briefly as well on the 269 patent. This is where the district court determined it was indefinite because of the term first position and second position. Now, those are Jepson claims.
Yeah, and I understood you to be making an argument that any Jepson claim preamble language is insulated from an indefiniteness holding. Is that your view? And if so, can you cite us some cases?
It's not our view absolute. We're saying that it is something that's well understood in the art. and that because this objection claim is conventional standard, and what I want to point out to the court this morning is that the judge recognized that that language was put in at the behest of the examiner. The judge recognized that in the claim construction order. This court has since, in just this year, issued an order in natural simulations, 23F4-1334, that said if it's at the behest of the examiner, there's a presumption that it would be valid.
Didn't that language change?
Didn't we reissue that?
Rehearing?
I think on different grounds. But
wasn't that language deleted from the original opinion, the language you're relying on?
It
I
may
think
have
there was some 28J letter that pointed that out, so I don't think I'm the first one to recognize that. But I think are you understanding what I'm talking about?
I think I do, Your Honor. Yes.
Okay, why don't you save your remaining time for rebuttal?
Thank you.
And we'll hear from Mr. Walsh.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Ryan Walsh. I'm from Jones Day here on behalf of RICO USA. Your Honors, over the course of the 5 years of this litigation, a lot has changed. There's been a lot of inconsistency, a lot of contradiction in Moss's infringement allegations. That inconsistency has continued on this appeal. But one thing has not changed since early in this case, and that's the evidence that has been developed, or really the lack thereof. And it's resulted in a failure of proof across the board on Moss's infringement claims.
Counsel, I want to ask you about the indefiniteness holding.
Yes, sir.
Substantially about set axis, that just doesn't strike me as being indefinite. An axis has only a certain distance, and tell me what's indefinite about that, and then we'll get to first and second position.
Sure. Well, Judge Lurie, I think the place to start is the claim language, and the term itself is a first guide plate pivotable at least substantially about set axis. Our belief is that, again, that language is indecipherable on its own. I think what Massa is arguing is to rewrite the claim so that the claim would read a first pivotable guide plate at least substantially about set axis. That's not what the claim says. The claim says, excuse me, a first guide plate pivotable at least substantially about set axis. Now, I think some of the best evidence of the reason that term is indefinite is, frankly, their expert. Their expert in his declaration at claim construction, which can be found at A12417-19, he cycles through five or six different interpretations of that language, including the positional location that they're relying upon now. But that was not their position at claim construction. In fact, at the claim construction hearing itself, they argued that it was a term of variability.
Substantially would seem to be in contradistinction to insignificantly about set access or totally about set access.
But,
I mean, how much really variability and indeterminacy is there about that word?
Well, I think, first and foremost, Your Honor, we are not saying that the term substantially on itself is inherently indefinite. That term is used 12 times in this patent. But each time it's used other than this time, it's talking about substantially parallel to the feed path or substantially along the feed path. And so that term, one of ordinary skill in the art, could look at that substantially along the feed path term in the claim and determine some sort of contour for that claim. This term is used only in this claim. It was added as an amendment during prosecution without any explanation. Claim 1, importantly Claim 1, independent Claim 1, also has a guide plate that is mounted to be pivotable about the axis. That's the language in Claim 1. This language was added to Claim 2, what became Claim 2, during prosecution without any explanation, It doesn't appear anywhere in the specification. It doesn't appear, there's nothing in the file history that would suggest that it's definite or that one of ordinary skill would understand it.
How about a first and second position? It doesn't say the first or the second. It's A, which sounds like it could be variable, but not necessarily indefinite.
Right. Well, Your Honor, I think the important thing to understand about the 269 patent is that, one, it's two pages. There's very little there. But the idea, the argument that first position and second position were known in the art, as they're in the preamble of the Jepson claim, that may be true. But they're not defined in the art. There's nothing in the specification
Why do you need to define it? It's just simple. The language just dictates a sheet is moved from the supply sheet stack to a location. Could be any location. You don't need to define what location is. You just have to move it from the sheet stack to a different location and then move it again to another different location. There's a first location and a second location, which are not the supply sheet stack. That's it. Why is that indefinite? It might be broad. Might be able to invalidate it because it's so broad, but I don't see how it's indefinite.
Your Honor, I think the key is, you're right, what this patent is about, all it's talking about is basically fluttering sheet on the sheet supply stack. But the key is not this. This was happening before this patent was filed.
None of that is relevant to the issue we're resolving. The issue we're resolving is whether or not saying something has to be moved from one position to a second position is indefinite or not. You don't have to know what the position is. You don't have to know where the position is to know that it's definite. It just has to be a different position.
Your Honor, the key is that this patent is all about timing.
Isn't it also answering my question?
No, I am.
I don't want to answer the question for you, but I thought in your briefs, or it became clear to me, that perhaps the answer to that question is that wasn't the argument that your friend on the other side was making. It seemed to me, reading the record, that they accepted that you have to know what the specific positions are, and then the fight was about whether there was disclosure of that. So I kind of, agreeing with the sentiment you're hearing from the panel, my answer to that was only that I didn't see that as the way the issue played out before the court. The outcome may have been different if that were the position your friend took. Am I wrong?
No, that's not incorrect. But back to Chief Judge Moore's point, the reason it's important, Your Honor, is if we don't know what the first position is and what the second position is, then we don't know the timing, and there's no way to know whether you infringe or not. That sheet cannot be in or being moved to the first position while that fluttering is going on. That's part of the agreed constructions in this case. And the claim specifically says that the new steps can't be happening when the according to the claim construction, when the sheet is being moved to the first position or the second position. So if we don't know what those sheets are, there is no way for one of ordinary skill in the art to know whether they're infringing the claim or not infringing the claim. We have to know. Their expert testified again, and I would certainly recommend that you review that, which is at A12422-23. In his declaration, he goes through a whole host of possible locations for the first location. He says it could be on the lifting mechanism. That's in paragraph 39. He said it could be adhering to the belt. All these different positions, basically anywhere in the printer.
Because it could be any of those, because it just has to be a first position and a second position. And a PASITA can reasonably assess whether there's infringement by just determining whether the sheet is moved to at least two different locations following the supply stack. Done.
But if the improved steps, Your Honor, the whole invention, if they're only the improved steps, if they're happening when the sheet is not in or being moved to the first position or the second position, there is no way for a PASITA to understand whether the device is infringing or not infringing. Because it has to know, look, if the fluttering's happening when it's in the first position, it's not infringing. But if it's not in the first position or being moved to the first position, it might be infringing. If it's being moved to the second position or in the second position and it's fluttering, again, that's not infringing. You have to know what those positions are to understand the timing.
I'm not sure I agree with you, but regardless, you said that you agreed with Judge Prost's argument that she made on your behalf, and so let me let me ask you, my understanding of what she said and that you agreed to is that Mesa admitted that there has to be a precise first position and second position. Where did they make that admission? I didn't see it.
Well, no,
I see them on many occasions suggesting what they think the first position might be or the second position might be, but I don't see them admitting that it has to be a specific concrete position.
Well, I agree with that, Your Honor, and I may have misunderstood Judge Prost's question. Our point was that they did not make the argument they're making now at claim construction. Again, their argument at claim construction was that it could be any of these different positions, and I think now on appeal, their argument is it's in this acquired position or the transport positions, that those are the first and second positions. Their expert never said that. He effectively said it could be anywhere in the printer, in the feed cycle. So perhaps that would include that, but they never made the specific argument they're making now about what the first position is and what the second position is until on appeal. And at that point, they argued that it's not clear exactly what they are, but that it's this acquired position and this transport position.
Do you want to cover any of the other issues?
Well, I do think, Your Honor, the one other point on the 269 in particular, if you look at the prosecution history, it is further evidence of why this term is indefinite. It talks about, and this is at A113, 118, and 119. It's very brief, but it talks about how there were multiple conversations with the examiner, multiple telephone conversations with the examiner and the applicant, where the applicant was trying to figure out how to characterize their invention and how to characterize this term of not during the feed cycle or the timing of the feed cycle or something like that. And then we don't have any record of those conversations or what was discussed or anything in the written record. All we know is that eventually this term was suggested by the examiner, but again, it's not used anywhere else in the specification. It's not used in the 133 patent that's incorporated or anything like that. So we would suggest that too. But I guess if it's okay, I would like to address a couple of the points the counsel made. One just on the use mechanism, and just very briefly, there is no evidence in the record that that is a use mechanism would be known as structure to one of ordinary skill in the art. There's none. The only evidence they have there's nothing in the specification. The only evidence they have extrinsic to that is this counting mechanism that that counters would be well known. But as Judge Wilson pointed out below, that's not the term. It's use mechanism. The Greenberg case, which counsel cited, that case is good for us. I mean, the term in that case was detent mechanism. A detent is a word for structure. One of ordinary skill in the art would understand that. My understanding is that it's an actual device that holds two things relative to each other in place. So you put force on one, and then it releases it. It also mentioned other terms like that, like a filter or a brake, so a braking mechanism. Something like that would be known to one of ordinary skill in the art. Use mechanism is not that term. There's no evidence, there's no dictionary definition for use mechanism or for use standing alone that would somehow connote structure to one of ordinary skill in the art. As far as the corresponding structure is concerned, I'm sorry.
Would you say if the use mechanism connoted structure, there wouldn't be a need for the recitation of function because the structure itself would suffice?
That's correct, Your Honor. The only way it could be defined is by the function that's laid out in the claim, which is what places it within 112.6. As far as the corresponding structure itself is concerned, the only structure in the specification corresponding to this function is the controller with database management system that can track the orgs in the way that's described in the claim. That's the only thing that's linked to it. The counter, there's a life counter that's mentioned once, but it's only mentioned in the context of the controller with database management system. And then just briefly, Your Honors, on the display term in the 314 patent, the bottom line is, I think for us, one, their construction is inconsistent with the claim language and the specification, and two, they've effectively admitted that a display requires hardware in the companion Xerox case. In their first proposed construction for display was a hardware device. I believe it was a monitor. But I think if you just look at the specification, I'm sorry, the claim language, and really that's the key. The claim language itself requires, it mentions these visual representations that one has to, the user has to be able to selectively associate these visual representations. As Judge Wolfson concluded, there is no way that you can, that a user can do that without the physical display. And so, regardless of the spec, the claims require physical display. But then also, if you look at the claim language in the specification, the specification consistently distinguishes between the software desktop and the hardware display, and consistently talks about the hardware desktop, the software GUI, being displayed on the display. And that's not just in the specification of the language. You can look at Appendix 125, column 13, 1 through 5. It's also figure 1A, which is at Appendix 111, and then Appendix 121, 6, column 6, 18 through 26. So I believe I'm out of time, so unless there are any questions, I will take a seat.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. Mr. Thunder, you have some more time.
There was a great number of finding of facts that was made by the district court. We had three of the most acclaimed experts in the country that put in declarations, and the judge disagreed with those experts. And that's not his role, to be candid. When I walked in the building here today, it's the first time I've been in the Eastern District here. There's a glass wall there that has a Sixth Amendment print on it, and the James Madison quote about the importance of juries. And we have a jury system for a reason. Juries are supposed to find issues of fact. This case is the poster child for not having the jury find those issues of fact. If you look at the record below, look at the appellate record, you can see that there are every issue that the judge cited, there were contradictory issues of fact based on the RICO's documents and testimony of their engineers and our own experts. So I think at this point we'd just like to say that this case should be returned back to the court and so the jury can decide those issues of fact.
And counsel, that was not a tremendously helpful rebuttal. I would like you to turn to the issue of indefiniteness, please, because
yes.
I'm not sure that Judge Prost is incorrect. I think that first position and second position might be incredibly broad and they might be definite, but I don't think you made the argument that I was discussing with opposing counsel. I think you made a lot of different arguments. In fact, I think they were playing a game of whack-a-mole with your arguments because they were so all over the place. But I don't think you made this argument, which to me seems like a very good one, which is the first position is just any position other than the supply sheet stack. The second position is any position other than the supply sheet stack or the first position, full stop. Incredibly broad claim, but I don't see that you made that argument. I see that throughout your case, you were saying, well, the first position is this, or the second position is this, and you were always wedding yourself to a defined and specific first position and second position that you wanted people to adopt. Am I wrong? Did you make somewhere the argument that Judge Lori started to ask about and that I asked about?
Yeah, we did. And if you look
where?
At the expert declaration that counsel just read.
Where? Tell me where. What page?
I don't have it off the top of my head, Your Honor. It is the one that counsel just read to you. Dr. McCarthy talked about it could be different places. It could be a first or second position. Your Honor is correct. That is exactly the position that we have.
So I'm now on, why don't you get your appendix? I'm on Dr. McCarthy's declaration. It's at page 12, 415. Tell me where he said this.
Well, it's not where he says that it's that general, because it is a Jepson claim. It is in the prior art. This is a conventional conventional knowledge. What Dr. McCarthy says is that it can be different locations. And he does give specific locations as examples. He doesn't say what Your Honor just said generally, but he did say it could be here or there, it could be here or there. It's just first and second location. He gave examples of where that would be.
And did you make this argument to the court?
I believe we did, Your Honor.
Did you make it in blue? Did you cite that testimony in blue and make that argument in blue? I realize there's so many issues in this case that some of them may be.
I don't recall if you made it in blue or not, Your Honor.
Okay, I'm not saying it.
All right. I thank both counsel. This case is taken under submission.
Thank you, Your Honor.